This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 4th of May, 2022. A market really on edge as we're awaiting this FOMC meeting tonight. There's lots of angles on this. What are they going to deliver relative to what is so thoroughly baked into expectations in terms of a determined rate rise, both today and throughout this year? And will this be a sell the fact or buy the fact, whether you're talking about the market, equity market, or the US dollar? And yeah, the whole reaction function and what will be guided in terms of where the Fed thinks it is relative to where the market is, that communication process taking place tonight. Looking at your chart there yesterday, Peter, on the different theme baskets we have across this market, it looks like there was a lot of a risk on tone yesterday to at least some corners of the market. A decent session, but especially for some areas, the speculative areas in particular.
Yeah, next gen medicine and e-commerce and bubble stocks, which are the three segments that overlap the most with growth investors. Cathie Wood's ARK Innovation Fund, etc. Retail behavior with the things that rebounded yesterday, and it's maybe a little bit difficult to see on your chart, but we had a closing price that was above the previous day's closing price. So you could argue, well, that's a positive sign, but I think we shouldn't put too much weight on these moves. As we move into the FOMC decision tonight with the consensus looking for 50 basis points, but that's not the big deal. It's the forward expectations that are the most critical here. So I would just say in equities, broadly speaking, medium term, nothing has really changed. I'll talk about it when we come back to earnings, but the financial conditions are tightening. Interest rates are really slowing things down. Consumer confidence are weakening. We have the JP Morgan's global manufacturing PMI index back below 50 for the first time since the lows in the pandemic. So seeing this slowdown already, and I think I'm just glad I'm not an FOMC voter tonight or today, because I don't think it's a very pleasant situation to be in, given all the dynamics that are playing out in the world.
Well, that sentiment very much echoed by one of the most prominent investors and commentators throughout the last few decades, Paul Tudor Jones, who's become more active in commenting in public. And an appearance he had on CNBC yesterday was one of the most shared things I've seen in a long time, echoing that sentiment. The Fed is in a really bad place here and that the markets are in a really bad place. He doesn't want to own stocks or bonds. He quote, can't think of a worse environment for stocks and bonds. And the reason being that, as you say, these financial conditions have tightened on a scale that we haven't seen. And he runs off a list of dates in market history stretching back to the 1980s, where he said, and on average, the Fed was within 24 days of a rate cut, not a rate hike. And in some cases was within a couple of days of actually beginning to cut rates. So a very, very unique environment. That's the sort of the backdrop I think it's important to underline here. As we look into today's FOMC meeting, sure, there's room for maybe sentiment has gone too far. If the Fed merely delivers relative to expectations, doesn't guide beyond what's expected, there could be some relief rally. But I think these comments from Paul Tudor Jones are an important set of comments for the bigger picture here. Well, we're not getting any tightening, though, in the commodities market. And it's a very interesting complex out there, because we have, crude oil has kind of been triangulating since the crazy spike on the days after Russia invaded Ukraine. But we've got some, Dr. Copper is saying the patient is ill here. What's the mix of factors you're looking at in this market?
Well, I think the overall, we're still looking at a market that right now, obviously, is going through a bit of a consolidation and correction, especially metal space, because of what's happening in China with the lockdowns. But just take a look at the crude oil here on slide four. As you said, John, we've been trading within a narrowing range now for since the spike, the panic peak there back in March. But this is what we focus on primarily, crude oil. But as we mentioned in the past, you just need to look a little bit underneath the bonnet and take a look at what's actually happening in the products that we can use, because we can't put crude oil in our car or in our generator. We need diesel or gasoline, and this is a completely different story. We are continuing to see increased prices both in New York and Europe, especially for diesel right now, are put in the margins that the refineries are currently making on the refining crude oil into diesel in New York and in Europe. And below you can see the prices for the two contract futures contracts, and this basically just highlights demand destruction has already arrived, even though crude oil is only around 100, just above $100. And the question is really what will happen over the coming months, especially when we do see the lockdown start to lift in China. Then I think we are still left in quite a precarious situation. Earlier today, it was announced by the European Union by Ursula von der Leyen that they will propose a ban on Russian crude oil over the next 6 months, and refined fuel should be phased out by the end of the year. This is obviously going to add even further pressure on the energy system. And we don't have to look any further than OPEC just to see that we have a problem with supply. On slide 5, this is a survey that's carried out every month by Bloomberg. Reuters and others do similar ones, but they are more or less in line so far, what I've seen. And what we saw last month was basically production rising by only 10,000 barrels a day. You can see some of the laggards, but I think most importantly, or most interesting, Saudi Arabia produced 100,000 barrels less than what they actually allowed to be able to produce within the quota. So it just simply raised the question, do OPEC have the spare capacity and the ability to increase production that the market has been looking for?
Yeah, and as far as I understand, in the case of products in the U.S., some of these strategic reserves releases don't necessarily match what the refineries need to increase output to get the supply situation more under wraps. But also, I mentioned Dr. Copper briefly, and we've seen quite a pull down in copper. Yes, range-wise, we haven't done a whole lot. Let's call it in a full year or so. But is this more forward concerns, or it doesn't have much to do with the actual supply situation on the ground?
I think it's just simply a question that this market ebb and flows between focusing on supply to focusing on demand. Right now, the demand side is in focus because we have the lockdowns in China, and we're seeing growth. The growth outlook for China being lowered. We also have the rate hikes that's going to accelerate in the U.S. today, potentially also putting a downward momentum on global growth. But in addition to that, we obviously need to also stay focused on the supply side, which also remains challenged. So I think right now, as I put in the headline there on slide 6, copper just in both directions can often be used as a macroeconomic play on China. And right now, obviously, the macroeconomic play is to play China from the short side, given the deterioration we're seeing. But I think it's also clear Chinese leadership simply cannot live with the kind of growth slowdown we've seen. Some kind of action will be forthcoming once the clouds of the lockdown starts to lift. And I think that one will be commodity intensive, especially those metals that is used for infrastructure and the electrification.
All right, we'll have to watch for that for sure from China, the fears around the Beijing lockdown and whether that's going to happen and to what degree. Very important. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about the FX side before I get back over to you, Peter. And on that note, there's a couple of things happening over the next couple of market sessions. It's not just the FOMC tonight, as I put in one of the charts on slide 3 in my FX overview. But as we look at what the FOMC has to say, and the market reaction, it's important to focus on not only what they say, but how the market reacts, obviously, and especially in the U.S. Treasury yield curve. I think it's quite interesting because let's say they're marginally more hawkish than expected. I sincerely and passionately hope they just drop this upper and lower bound nonsense and take the rate straight to, for example, 1%. I think that would establish a decent, modest, hawkish surprise and indicate that they want to front load some of this hiking. And then the question is, in the Q&A, for example, will Powell sort of open the window for larger than 50 basis point hikes in that effort to get the rate up quicker? Not necessarily because they see the rate next year, early next year being higher, but they just want to get there quicker. I think that could be interesting, first of all, is the hawkish surprise side potential. And then secondly, how does the yield curve react to that? Of course, the short end might lift a bit, but could the long end stay flat or drop a bit? And long yields, especially as we've emphasized, are especially important for the Japanese yen, which has been on a wild ride lower. I think a lot of that wild ride lower has also been linked to commodities. So there's two angles to that. So that's one aspect I'm looking at, or whether we just see a hawkish surprise supporting the dollar broadly, no complications needed. And then looking at a currency like sterling, where we have a Bank of England tomorrow, where it's holding its nose as it is hiking rates, being forced to do so because of inflation, but seeing an onrushing economic slowdown due to cost of living and real income drops in the UK, and there's less of a fiscal offset there as well relative to Europe. I've been really curious how this euro sterling pair has managed to stay in this lower range. So I'm really curious to watch that pair. As you can see from my chart there on slide 3, it's really been playing off this 200-day moving average and not able to break higher. If it is going to break higher, the Bank of England would potentially be the trigger for that as well, since the Bank of England will be reaching the 1% yield level in its policy rate. That is supposed to trigger their plans to start quantitative tightening, which adds further headwinds to the UK economy. Okay, besides, of course, the main attraction here being the FOMC, Peter, where are you looking at? And you've got a few stocks on your list of those to watch today on slide 7.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're still powering on. There's a lot of European companies reporting. The most important one today being Maersk. And Maersk is the world's largest container shipping company. They recently raised their fiscal year EBITDA guidance, or operating profits before depreciation and amortization. They increased that guidance to $30 billion from $24. So in that sense, you could say the result today is not a big surprise. It was very much what would be expected. But you can see the magnitude of the underlying profit growth. So Maersk is more than doubling its Q1 operating income, $9.1 billion versus $4 billion just a year ago. And you can see on slide 7, the share price here, it's just phenomenal. I will reiterate my long-term view. I think the logistics industry theme, if you will, I think still is a very interesting one to be exposed to as an investor. My main thesis for the future is that you will have 5 or 6 major players being able to deliver A to C services across the spectrum of rail, ports, air cargo, etc., and all the auxiliary services that you need. And then you'll have some few local players that can sort of add some specifics to a certain geographical area. And I think Maersk will be one of those 6. So, and then, potash companies, we on Monday, we wrote about fertilizers and potassium, or potash, if you will, and a phosphate. And we wrote about nitrogen, which are the 3 ingredients you're using for producing fertilizer. And then the EU is out this morning saying they're considering sanctions on main Belarus potash companies. And that, I think, will only add to the pricing pressure on potash. It is a fascinating dynamic with, the political motive and drive to become independent of Belarus and Russia to a large extent, while managing a galloping energy and food crisis. And the more of these actions, the more self-inflicted damage you'll do to the economy. I really wonder how much the EU households can take before it becomes too much. But when we're talking about values, you probably can go quite a long way. So focus on protest companies. You can find our article, our equity note on home.sachs under research, or insights it's called. US earnings, just a quick recap. Airbnb, great results, both for Q1. Guidance were quite strong, better than expected. They're seeing a healthy traveling demand. Lyft, on the other hand, disappointed on their outlook for Q2, and they're still struggling to become profitable. And they were really hammered, I think 25% in extended trading. So, and Uber was very fast to indicate that they are definitely not a Lyft, and they are going to report later today. And then AMD. We've talked about it a couple of times. They have been extremely innovative in their recent computer microprocessor chips, and especially those that are used for data centers. They're taking market share against Intel and other chip makers. And then they are also reiterating what Microsoft said, that they're seeing that PC demand is weakening. And I think that is a straight derivative of the lower consumer confidence surveys that we're seeing.
Yeah, it could be a hangover as well from forward brought demand from the pandemic as people outfitted their home offices, etc. Volkswagen up today. This is a really big stuff. One of the world's largest car makers. Interesting to hear what they have to say. Is the supply side, I guess, I mean, we all know where the demand side is on some of this, but the supply side, I guess, is that the focus on cars?
Yeah, it is. I haven't had time yet to read the finer details. I am of course most curious about the electric vehicles. What are the constraints for that and the pricing pressure? Because that's important for Tesla. Because if Volkswagen is experiencing it, Tesla will as well. We have to keep in mind that the Volkswagen put out preliminary Q1 figures in April, so the price action today is not as big because most of the figures were already released, but they are sort of making a more, you know, precision commentaries in this full Q1 release that you can find. In the US, Booking is not interesting because we had Airbnb yesterday. I think Uber is super interesting. It is really ingrained in the US Silicon Valley technology ecosystem, as I would put it. Even though we have had Lyft, I think it's an important one. Marriott, not interesting because we had Airbnb. We know traveling is important. Moderna, it's not even interesting either. But Fortinet, being the biggest company in our cybersecurity basket, will have our attention. Ferrari, you could argue, is interesting in the sense that we're seeing luxury stocks in Europe really taking a beating here because Chinese and Russian, the upper classes of Russian citizens and Chinese citizens are key drivers of luxury goods, potentially also Ferrari. So it could be a negative surprise there. And then Albemarle, being a big player in the lithium market, of course, is a key watch because there is such a supply glut. There's such a supply deficit that we really, really need to see these lithium miners really rolling out more projects to close the gap. Otherwise, I don't think it's a fun walk for the EV makers in the future.
Yeah, it's very interesting, that whole supply chain, those supply chain constraints in EVs. All right, turning to the macro calendar today, it's all about the FOMC tonight. I've got the times and everything up on slide 9. We'll be out actively tweeting and commenting on this on Twitter, whether it's on my personal account, at John J. Hardy. We'll try to remember to retweet from the Saxo Market Call Twitter account as well, so you can follow us there. The ISM Services Survey out for April today at 1400 GMT. And this is interesting as we've seen a slowdown in the survey, but it's really misleading when you have a diffusion survey because anything over 50 still shows expansion. And we're coming off record levels, crazy levels, about well above 60. So, you know, when things have to continue to get better, it's hard for these to sustain these levels. So, you know, if we get anything close to the 58 level that's expected today, that is an extremely strong figure suggesting there's very little slowdown in the consumer in the services sector, which is the dominant sector of the U.S. economy. But of course, a very ugly miss, something well below 55, for example, would be an interesting sour note and change the narrative a bit. That U.S. trade balance, by the way, for March, expected to be a far and away a record at over minus 100 billion in deficit. A very ugly figure there. And in longer term, of course, weighing against the dollar's prospects. Brazilian rate, and another 100 basis points expected tonight to take the rate to 12.75%, if you can believe that. And as mentioned tomorrow, that Bank of England meeting, I think, really key for sterling and Norway as well, with the central bank meeting others and the central and eastern European countries as well tomorrow. Okay, let's helmets on for tonight's FOMC meeting. Let's see where it takes us and what the guidance is. And we'll, of course, have a wrap on that in tomorrow's Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.